it's been. Just wanted to give a shout out to our patrons and all the people who interact with us on Twitter and Facebook. It's really fun getting that sort of stuff. We as a group value it. Getting that sort of feedback is amazing. That sort of stuff keeps us going at this. If you like what we do and are wanting to and are able to support us financially, please do on patreon.com/thehydianway. And if not, share us around any place that you want to, because in the end, word of mouth and trumpeting the shows, that's the best, truly best way of helping us out. Thank you, and now on to the show. As I sit down at the table across from this coiled-up dragon, my bogwing lands on my shoulder. What was the point of bringing the Purgle all the way out to the middle of space?
I lean over the table, unscrolling an ancient, tattered star chart written on actual paper. My contacts tell me that this is genuine, and if they're right, then we are closer than any living souls to one of the biggest enigmas in the galaxy.
A bigger enigma than the Dwinwagwin sitting on my space waffles? Excuse me, Sarah. Your 5th leg is on my breakfast. We're exploring points of interest in this engaging tale from the Hydian Way. We're your hosts, Becca Black,
Ben Yendel,
and David Pickering.
This week, we're talking about those points in time where you've got an ongoing campaign and you come to a lull. The plots just aren't really coming. You've got through one of your big bads, but you're wanting to keep going with these characters, so you've tried to come up with another one. You've tried to use the turning from one character creating problems for another one, which then creates problems for another one, and connecting your big bads and all that sort of stuff. But there just sort of seems to come a part where players are starting to itch for doing something different, doing something probably with the same characters, maybe, maybe not, but they're wanting to do something different. And that's sort of the most dangerous time for any sort of campaign or adventure.
Yeah, any time where you just sort of start to get the feeling that maybe, really, it's when the phones start coming out. It's when people are not interested to the point that they checking their, like, Facebook feeds or stuff instead of listening. And that's not to say that that's, you know, normal behavior, or even abnormal, I guess. It depends on the group.
Sometimes there are players who do that regardless. Like, I've been in groups as a player where there's one or two people who are constantly checked out. They're constantly on their phone, they're watching YouTube, they're scrolling through Tumblr, because they work all day and D&D or whatever game that they're playing on tabletop is their sort of social time to unwind, and they do that. And so it's like, I mean, if it's expected of that person, that's fine, but if it's actually you checking out of the game and not participating, then it's not fine.
Actually, I've had an entire TPK based off of someone checking out and just not paying attention to what their role was.
Oh boy.
They were the face. They had decided to go read, I think it was one of the core books, or maybe it was one of the new specialization books. I mean, they do happen every now and then. But the player was reading one of these books, and just, nope. They got to the position in a scene where this player, the face of the party, is supposed to come up and woo the people that they're talking to try and get out of this scene that was going to go very differently. And instead they pull out a gun and shoot them.
Oh boy.
The person that they were supposed to negotiate with, which completely gobsmacked the entire party.
Yeah, that's a little extreme.
And then, yeah, TPK happened.
Yikes.
Guy got set on by a Ronto.
Well, if you're going to go.
The only one whose character didn't actually die was not there, and none of them felt comfortable enough to actually kill this character. But that also meant that there was this character that was in the scene, thusly making it more difficult, but was checked out of the scene as well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you get to the point where you're having, like, flagging attention, or maybe people are just not excited about it anymore, or maybe worse, they've been reading the source books, they've been reading the new splat books, and they're more excited about, like, oh, well, I really want to change things up and do a campaign where I can run this new spec I found, or something. Like, I'm really tired of playing the negotiator, I want to play the guy who uses the cyclic like, repeating laser Gatling gun thing.
Because those are cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like bow ties.
What? No.
I actually got that reference.
Vetoing that Doctor Who reference. Vetoing it. So, this topic gives me an opportunity to bring up something that I brought up a while ago, having multiple GMs, like rotating GMs. And this is more of a possible fix for a long-term sort of stagnation where, like, you know, there's time in between missions, it's like downtime, and instead of doing a bottle episode, you could potentially let one of your players come up with a one-shot for your characters and run it in between campaign missions, so to speak. Because what I have experienced as a GM and as a player is the GM, they have a lot of responsibility to the story and to the players. The weight of developing the story, running the story, and keeping all of the information organized is on one person. And I've mentioned that weight of responsibility before, I think. Having multiple GMs takes the onus off of one person to develop the story, and it also gives every other person who runs a game, like, even if it's not with the same characters, if it's just a one-shot to sort of get everybody's, like, a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
It gives every other participant a personal stake in the story, and it lets everyone experience GMing for themselves and gain an appreciation for GMing, which might not be an experience that all of your players have. Because, like, I know that when I was running a Star Wars game, I think only one other person in the group knew what it was like to be a GM, and nobody else had run their own game. And if more of them knew exactly how much work I was putting into it, I feel like they would have had more respect towards what I had put together and been able to give it the proper attention.
Yeah.
And so, like, what my current Star Wars game that I'm a player in is doing is we all have our own characters, and the GM has his character, and we're planning on doing set missions with this group of people and rotating out GMs. So the first adventure is being GM'd by Dan, and then the next one might be Chris, and the next one after that might be me, and so on and so forth. And that sort of gives everyone a chance to play and everyone a chance to GM, and it sort of keeps up continued interest because everybody has a different playstyle and GM style. So we get to experience a lot more of tabletoping than you would with just the same GM coming up with the same stories. Because I know that I have a tendency to fall into a pattern, like even just with character creation, I tend to make long-suffering, lawful good characters and wild card, chaotic good characters. So, like, there's the one that will blow up a train to stop a train robbery, and there's the one who just wants a nap. I can see the archetypes that I keep falling into with these characters that I create for stories, but with multiple perspectives from multiple GMs, you don't really get that set pattern.
Yeah.
And so it's less predictable, too. So it's a little bit more interesting from all sides.
My group does a variant on what you're talking about.
What you say makes a huge amount of sense, Becca. Like, bringing more people behind the proverbial screen is a great thing. First off, they might go off and create their own groups and get ideas and just create a community. That's, in theory, the ideal.
Yeah.
The more practical bit is, as you're saying, Becca, they have a bit more respect of the process. And from the sounds of it, at least the way that you've described your GMing style, you take on so much of stuff that can be offloaded onto the players. What I'm meaning by that is so much of this description can be the player deciding it and adding to it instead of just the GM.
Yeah, definitely.
And it turning into a shared experience instead of it just being the GM being sort of the arbiter of everything.
Mm-hmm. I think it would definitely sway things more towards collaborative storytelling rather than the GM telling you a story and you reacting to it. I know that I would feel less obligated to plan things as thoroughly as I do if I knew that my players were going to contribute world-setting things themselves. Like, I have a group currently where I can absolutely trust them to do that, and so I have very sparse notes for the adventure that I'm running them on, which is the first time I've GM'd for them, but I've been a player with them several times over, and so I know that they have a very good sense of improvising and playing off of each other and coming up with random things to throw into the world, like saying, oh, well, there's a coffee shop here. I know there is. There's gotta be. And it's called Caper Joe's because it's a superhero themed coffee shop. And the GM is just like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, that's your regular hangout. And so because I can trust those particular players to fill in the gaps, I don't feel the pressure to write out all of the lore and all of the, like, datapad entries that they might find if they find a datapad and start scrolling through it. Whereas with the other group that I was running a Star Wars campaign for, I had to come up with everything, or else they would come up with a question that I didn't know how to answer. And I was just like, you want me to put in more work?
I definitely agree that it's good to get your other players some time behind the GM screen.
Yeah.
My group had sort of like a variant on what you do. And because the other thing is that in addition to episode fatigue, my group tends to get system fatigued because we have a lot of people and we have a lot of ideas. So people will say, oh, well, I'm, you know, I want to do something other than just Star Wars. Because we ran Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, for like, I want to say 2 or 3 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
We switched between the different Star Wars systems, but we ran nothing but Star Wars for about 3 years. And so then we started doing this thing that we do now, where we typically have two different games running. And not everybody from Group 1 is in Group 2, but most of the same people are. And it's every other week. So, like, right now, it's Pathfinder and a Viking-themed game my friend is running called Yggdrasil.
Oh, cool.
But, so, what you know, this tomorrow, we'll do Pathfinder, and then the next week, we'll do Yggdrasil, and then we'll be back to Pathfinder the week after that. And that schedule doesn't work for everybody, because, you know, it's a little decompressed. It's a little bit...
Right.
Like, people can forget what happens, but we've gotten good at the summaries, and we have players who take notes on things. But part of that is also helpful, because all of us work, and a lot of us don't have time to put together consistently a well-thought-out adventure every week as a GM. It doesn't happen every week, especially if GM fatigue sets in at all. So I feel like the way that we do it, it gives you a little bit, because you can have a week off, or you can do half of it 1 week and half of it the next week, and it gets more people behind the wheel of GMing, because we've got, you know, the guys who's GMing Yggdrasil hadn't GM'd before he GM'd the system, and we had, I mentioned before, one of my players decided to GM the Fate Dresden file system. And we discover that he's honestly probably a better GM than I am, just naturally, because of that. He just has a knack for it, and he writes really, really creative stories. And because we're getting other systems, we can sort of cherry pick things that we like. Like, we've definitely taken, I know everybody takes the initiative slot system from Star Wars and puts it into stuff. I've been running Pathfinder vanilla, but really, honestly, keeping track of the initiative slots is getting annoying, so I may start proposing we do the Star Wars way.
Yeah.
It's so much simpler.
It is.
Like, improved initiative and all of that. So we run the multiple systems, and it works for us because it helps to save off fatigue, both from a player and a GM standpoint, because we've definitely had GM burnout. I had to take probably a good 6 months off of GMing at one point. I was just tired of doing it every
week.
Yeah,
same, honestly.
And that is actually when I think we started doing this, because we had my games that had been running for, you know, probably a year and a half at that point before we started doing this. And I was just, like, tired of running GM, you know, GMing all the time. And then when I said, I'm going to take a break, two people came forward and said, well, I want to keep running Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And the other guy said, well, I want to run Dresden Files. And so that's what we did.
Okay.
And I got to spend, you know, 6 months just playing in both of them. And then the Star Wars campaign racked up and I picked up with something else. I think, you know, sometimes, honestly, the best thing you can do for a flagging campaign, and it's not for all of them, is to either find a way to take some of the pressure off the GM if they're the problem, or give the players a chance to do something. You know, don't necessarily make it be, oh, it's the same game every week forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work, you know, as some people are like, oh, well, I signed on to play Star Wars. I want to play Star Wars. And we had people who were like, well, I'm not super interested in the Dresden Files, so I'll just come on Star Wars weeks. And that's fine. Like, you know, we like having them around because they're friends. We like hanging out with them. But if they don't want to play Dresden Files, they don't have to.
We actually, at this point, and you're going to laugh at me, at this point, we have spectators. We have people that just come and sit and hang out while we play, but have no interest in playing. So it's like the 8 people who are playing, and then 2 or 3 people who are sitting in the kitchen eating, like, Fritos and hanging out. It's crazy. But it's great. We love it.
Yeah.
Quickly circling back to one of the things Becca brought up of running one-shots for putting a different perspective on players. Some of our listeners will have listened to next... I'm going to do this in a cute way. Some of our players will listen to next Thursday, about a month ago, of the Halloween special for Heroes of the Hydean Way. It's a nice two-parter that, if you haven't listened to, that's a nice little two-part series that you can go in, get a taste, have this little four-room mystery of what's going on and just some bonkers stuff going on. In doing so, it provides a breather for the GM. Like, it was able that I could play Star Wars for, I think, the first time? Maybe the second time?
Oh, wow.
I don't play this system much. I don't really play much at all. Being a player is still kind of new and scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
Done by Chris Ng from Silhouette Zero, and it allowed all 4 of us who were able to do it a new perspective on what was going on, just like what Becca was saying. Going into this actual published module, it's a nice breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about this while David was talking. I just had like another idea that could possibly be too complicated, because what idea I have isn't too complicated sometimes. With system fatigue, I know that my friend Nick is really tired of Star Wars. He is just really tired of it, which is ironic considering that he just proposed a new Star Wars campaign. But he's really tired of the Fantasy Flight game system. And I was just thinking, in Community, the show Community, they managed to span across so many different genres all in one season because they dedicate single episodes to being, you know, like a zombie episode or an animated episode or whatever. And that got me thinking that for system fatigue and also for system exposure, it might be neat to try and put together a campaign that is sort of a community-style genre-swapping game where you keep playing the same characters every time, but you translate them into a different system for the new arc. So, like, the first arc you're playing in FFG Edge of the Empire, the second arc maybe you're playing in the Fate system, the third arc maybe you're in 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, and so on. You keep the same characters, but you translate them into the other system so that you have an idea of how that system works, and you also get to experience a different genre that isn't, you know, it's not Star Wars, it's not D&D, it's not whatever Fate is, I don't know.
Fate can be anything.
You get to experience all that while still developing these characters, and they can be contained so that it's not like an overarching plot that you have to worry about. It's just like one-shots with the same characters in different systems. So, like, a 3-part act in Star Wars, and a 3-part act in Masks, and a 3-part act in Monster of the Week, or something like that.
I could see that being difficult, but yeah, that would be cool.
It could work really well, even as an extended campaign,
yeah,
if you had a good frame story. Like, why are they jumping genres? Well, because they are in some cyberpunk future, and they're using a virtual reality
thing.
Stargate thing. Yeah, something like, oh, they found a dimensional portal, or like a, you know, like a rift that takes them all to these different worlds, or anything, and that can be a real jumping on point to have a reason why suddenly you're jumping from D&D 5th edition to Shadowrun, although, God help you if you're trying to run Shadowrun,
yeah,
and you haven't got an advanced degree in mathematics.
And then the very last system that you play in at the end of the campaign is Call of Cthulhu, because apparently nobody survives Call of Cthulhu.
I will say, it is a campaign designed more for the kind of people that love to run Tomb of Horrors in D&D. It's a system that's sort of like, how long will you last? Or,
yeah,
you know, how many characters will you go through?
Yeah.
It then turns into, okay, this character is going to die, so how is this character going to die? And giving a lot of significance to the brief life and very, hopefully, heroic death of this character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's kind of, how will you die? Or at least that's how I've always viewed Call of Cthulhu.
I think that could be... Not easily implemented, but it could be implemented, especially with the multiple GM tactic.
That would work nice.
Different people have different propensities towards genres, because like, I know that I am greatly drawn towards murder mysteries, whereas my girlfriend is very much drawn towards horror. She would run a horror campaign, and I would run a mystery campaign, and then another friend would make an old-fashioned adventure campaign, where you, like, do a dungeon crawl.
And then everyone just runs Scooby-Doo?
Yeah. With multiple GMs, that could definitely be doable, and it would theoretically generate continued interest in the campaign. And that way you could also deal with, like, if somebody can't show up 1 week, but a new friend wants to play with you, then you could just have players swap out when it's convenient for them.
That's an interesting way of doing it. I still like the idea of the starting party getting onto a roller coaster and going into this really weird portal. But
they Willy Wonka it.
I was going on the original D&D cartoon, but okay.
There's no knowing where it's going. That would be one heck of a frame story if you were going to end in Call of Cthulhu.
That would be awesome.
Willy Wonka and the amazing Technicolor reality that you cannot even.
Oh my god.
You know, that actually would be a pretty good frame story for it.
Yeah, then you have to figure out what to do with the Wonka character the whole campaign, because presumably he'd be on the boat.
They could just be the deity. It'd be like in The Witcher 3 when you have Gontor O'Dim.
I haven't gotten that far in it. I'm the slowest Witcher 3 player ever.
Well, second.
So there's this character, I think he's also called the Mirror Man or something like that, but his name is Gontor O'Dim, and he's sort of a trickster god type of character, and he conscripts Geralt into completing tasks for him, and it's basically, he follows Geralt around on his missions, doesn't help him at all, but he's just like, oh, you're doing well. He's just there taunting him. It's like, you're doing this job for me, you're doing great. And Geralt's just like, why are you doing this to me?
He sounds like the guy, there was back in Age of Empires 2, there was this cheat code that going around the schools and all of the, like, you know, the elementary school kids and whatever. And all the, you know, back in the day when, you know, oh, I heard if you type in this code, things will happen. And it was, yeah. So they told us, you know, we heard like, oh, you got to type in this code. It was like, I love the monkey man or something. And they'll give you like the best character ever. And you do it. And you get this naked villager who just, you tell him to do stuff, and he's like, that's a good idea. Someone should do that. I'll get on that. And he just kind of doesn't do anything.
Oh my god.
He's just sort of like, compliments you on thinking about the idea, and then moves on with his life.
Getting the different perspectives, getting the players, not so much really to get a better idea of what's behind the screen, though that's a great thing, but get them feeling like they can contribute more than just being the ones who react to the situation as presented by the GM. My character will do this and not really affect the world. Yes, having a rotating GM, how one person runs a relatively short adventure, a 2-3 session thing that does have a definite conclusion, works great, because then once you've got that conclusion, you then have a lot more mental permission to continue on, even with the same characters, in a different fashion.
Yeah.
Because you've closed up the major threads. You may have minor threads that will continue on through everyone's story, and that just makes it better. Having the major threads of, okay, we're looking for this murderer, and we have found this murderer, or have we? Having a concrete conclusion to this big, in bold plot helps. And even if you're spiking a campaign, having that one last session to end it helps. Because it is also the other thing that can happen with long-running campaigns that just seem to be going on life support because, well, the players aren't interested, the GM's kind of fatigued, and everyone's looking at the new thing. It's always a valid thing to be willing to spike a campaign and say, we're not having fun anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we've done that. We've had games where it's just sort of like, you know, we're not enjoying this the way that we were, or like, you know, we thought this concept would be more interesting. Or I as the GM have come and said, look, guys, I'm out of ideas. I don't know where to go from where we've ended up. Like, we have ended up in not where I was expecting to be, and I don't have a plot for you that's going to be at all interesting. And that's okay. Like, I mean, some people kind of see that as oh, well, you can salvage a campaign, you can always fix it. And I think to a certain extent, you can always try, but sometimes it might just be better to talk with your group and say, like, what would be more fun?
Yeah.
You know, you really want to keep going with a campaign that I, as the GM, have lost heart and lost faith in? Or do you want to try something new?
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes that can just come off as like, oh, the GM's got a short attention span. I think if you're going to keep a campaign going for, you know, realistically at least several months to a year, if not more, you got to believe in it. You got to care about it as a GM or a player. Yeah. Like, it has to be something that, you know, you're willing to spend the several hours a week it takes to plot and as several hours a week it takes to play.
Yeah.
It's a bigger time commitment than you'd think.
One of the things that I keep coming back to in my head is I am a very TV-centered person. That was sort of my baseline. You can always tell with TV shows when the original writers have exited the building. Sometimes that TV show gets immensely better. Sometimes that TV show gets immensely worse. And sometimes they just keep cycling through at a very mediocre quality and it just goes on forever and ever and ever. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. But every now and then you get, sometimes shows should end.
Yeah.
On the other hand, then you've got things like Star Trek The Next Generation that, hey look, they revamped the writer's room and in season 3, all of a sudden it gets a lot more dramatic and a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the time Riker gets his beard.
All of the plot was being shaved off every single day.
The beard brings the drama.
The plot threads were a little bit more literal.
Sometimes it's, okay, I've been running this idea in a way that my players don't like, and my players are just sort of tuning out.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you have the discussion with your players, like we've been saying all of this episode, discuss with your players. Okay, this isn't quite working, or I'm starting to run out of ideas, or what do we want to do? Because something's not quite right here. Sometimes the players are going to say, yes, we like the players, we're just not quite sure where to take him, or the difficulty seems to be too high, the difficulty seems to be too low. Well, we've beat this guy, and this other guy's just his brother. Well, why would we want to go after the family more than once? Some of it can be setting a better villain, better mystery in front of the players, where it just hasn't been working for you, and then what the players want, what you want, click, and it becomes good. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes, yes, they can be salvaged. Sometimes it's better to just kill it and come up with something new. Even just swapping GMs, having two GMs of using Becca's suggestions. This is the murder mystery GM. This is the horror GM. And going between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's maybe not exactly a full-out rotating GM, but having that different perspective, stretching the characters, stretching what the players are expecting and what the players are doing. And especially if you're doing a more limited run thing, have an exit plan. Nowadays, most realistic TV showrunners, they have an exit plan for their series. That's kind of the reason why most TV shows have a mid-season finale, because they're never really sure if they're getting picked up for the back half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're wanting to make sure that if it goes out, this is at least a place where I can look in the mirror and be satisfied with, we went out here. And sometimes the player group says, we're done with this, let's just wrap it up, and you head straight for that exit ramp.
I've used the exit ramp before. We've said, and in fact, the person who was playing and running the Yggdrasil campaign, he tried it, and then his life got busy, and he wanted a break from GMing. So we had kind of been building to the town getting attacked by bandits. And so he just ran the town getting attacked by bandits and ended it after that. You know, some people, I think like two people actually escaped. Most of us died. That system's a little bit brutal as far as fighting goes. Because it's not attempting to be like, ah, yes, Vikings in the Thor sense. It's like actual Vikings and realistic
Vikings in the History Channel sense.
Exactly. It was sort of like, yes, you were a bunch of villagers with nothing but bows and the occasional like pickaxe. And you've just been attacked by actual bandits. And he was sort of like, I'm running this the way that I plan to run it at the end of the campaign because I want it to end. But it was still, you know, it was a kind of a glorious, you know, we went out with a bang.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then when he picked back up, when his life calmed down a little bit, you know, one of the players decided to bring his character back from that campaign who had survived. And he learned from that. And now we're having a really great game. He's taken what he learned in that first campaign and brought it into this campaign, and nuking that campaign actually gave him the time to, you know, plot this one out. So it worked out for the best.
Sounds like a good way of doing it in the end, especially as a GM, because as a GM, you're sort of planning everything. Am I going to have the players this week? Like, which players am I going to have? What sort of stories can I tell with this crew? As I have as a player, the fabled worst GM ever, and he still tells me about a game of 4th edition D&D that I got out of, I'm pretty sure, 3 years ago now, and it the same module is still going.
Wow.
From what I remember at that point, 3 years ago, no one liked it then. They play monthly for like 6 hours at a time, if not more. It's still going is not a crazy thing that this guy is. Yeah, pretty crazy. It's 4th edition, so they get into a combat that takes the rest of the time, and then they're on to the next thing. Every 3 sessions, they get into a social scene, which takes all of a half hour, and then they're into a combat.
Wow.
Is there any wonder why I'm no longer in that campaign?
That's honestly where I find that we struggle the most as my group, is when we just get stuck fighting all the time, and it's just like, oh, the fighting takes forever, and then we have to continue it next time. You know, I think our best games are when the fighting is quick. That's why I like Star Wars. You know, the fighting isn't unfair, but it's over quick because you can't usually take more than a couple of hits for any one character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I've really learned from Chris Ng, from Silhouette Zero, from him being on Heroes of the Hydean Way, and also just from Heroes in general, is a lot of combat can be avoided. Very little combat is necessary to a scene. Sometimes it's running up in behind someone and shanking them, and then being a wise enough GM to let that shanking actually land. Sort of the knife to the kidney kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely like, you as the GM have the creative control to be like, okay, well, that works in a narrative sense. It wouldn't make sense for you to have to roll that. You just do it.
That person is no longer there kind of thing.
It's yeah.
Like, yeah. Or you can have the 3 rounds of combat where you get into the knife fight and it just sort of drags out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As an example from Heroes, one of the things that had happened, there was this hangar bay, had load lifters in it, had these reprogrammed protocol droids, and had astromechs in it, and turned into actually a pretty big fight that went across like 2-3 episodes on Heroes. But the main component was, if we sneak into a little bit of mechanics, we can reduce the complement of people there at least 50%. We can get rid of all the protocol droids that are there by blowing them out the airlock. First goal. Second goal is, how do we deal with these giant load lifters that will step on us and crash us? Instead of going into combat with them, instead of trying to figure out some way of, like, I was going to go with them, trying to lead them into a deadfall or some other semi-combat related thing, they decide to do a social check on them with this brand new droid that they have that they roll out as pretty much a jukebox. And they get these load lifters dancing, which then leads to this idea of load lifters dancing a conga line. Oh, yeah.
It's a load lifter luau.
The first ones are just carrying a proton torpedo and shaking it like maraca. And this little astromech is leading the line just around, taking care of all the big guys. And then the party only has to deal with the astromechs. That was a way of shortening the combat to a almost minuscule amount. And doing so created scenes, and it was all because of the players deciding, I don't want to fight those guys. They look big and they're going to hurt me. And also, going through one of the players' minds was, this is going to take a long time for combat. I don't really want to do that. How can I get around this?
Yeah.
Becca, David, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners on trying to get a bit of energy back into your campaign once it started to flag? Or any advice on how to run a successful GM swapping thing?
Well, to both of those things, I think the key is talk it over with your group and come to a consensus, because pretty much any time that a campaign is flagging, if you feel like it's flagging, I would bet you someone else feels like it's flagging too, and they just don't want to say anything and rock the boat. Everyone sort of assumes like, oh, I must just be the only one that feels this way. But really, if you feel like, oh, this is struggling a little bit, then everyone sort of got that elephant in the room. So if you can just say to your group, like, hey, what do you guys feel about this? You know, maybe we need to shake it up, or maybe we need to go to one every other week, and someone else can step into the GM's shoes and see, like, oh, you know, I know, Steve, you've really been wanting to run Shadowrun, and you do have an advanced degree in mathematics, so you're qualified. If you want to do that in between game sessions, now's the time. Shadowrun was the only thing that was coming into my head there. This is one of those decisions you don't want to make unilaterally. Because ultimately, even if it's flagging, everyone still has buy-in to the campaign. Like, you know, if you just say, like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling it, guys. That's a lot of time and energy that the players have just kind of lost now, because you don't want to run the campaign anymore. So I feel like if there's a way to kind of come to some degree of agreement. Like, I had a campaign where I was running it, and then my life got busy, and I got tired of running this particular Star Wars campaign, and one of my other players was like, I want to keep running this. And I was like, sure, have my notes. So it doesn't mean that a campaign has to die just because the GM's tired of it.
My final thoughts are going to be two-part, because it's going to be addressing the rotating GM thing, and also, in general, addressing people checking out in a campaign. For rotating GMs, the thing that I think would be most beneficial for planning one and making sure that it's implemented easily, besides obviously communication, because communication is like paramount in all of these things, would be know that that's what you're doing from the get-go, and keep your arcs contained so that when you pass the baton, so to speak, you don't have a full manuscript to pass over to the next GM. Because I think it's very helpful to see other GM's notes, even if your GM style and your little one-shot contained storyline is going to be completely different, because it helps to see the strategies and techniques that other people use and find helpful. If somebody else were going to take over my Star Wars game, I would just send them my notes that I had. Especially since after the players have run the campaign or the one-shot or the story or whatever, there's no need to keep the inner workings of that a secret unless you plan to run it again slightly differently using the same notes. As far as running with multiple GMs, I think know what you're doing and keep things contained and don't let things get away from you would be the biggest tips that I have for that. But on the subject of people checking out and campaign fatigue and stuff like that, we've talked a lot about checking in with your players about what they want to do and whether or not they're having fun and stuff. I think it's pretty important to also check in with how they're doing mentally, because I know that for myself, being somebody who struggles with mental illness quite often, there are times that I'm just not up to being in a campaign, whether it's GMing or otherwise. Like, for a very long time last year, while my campaign was on a break, part of the contributor to us being on a break was that my depression was sapping my creativity and sapping my energy to write anything. And so I just could not physically will myself to work on the campaign. And then when I was a player in a friend's campaign, I was dissociating throughout the game and not paying attention, not because I wasn't interested, but because I physically could not pay attention. And so if there's a situation like that with your players and you check in with them and they say, oh, well, I'm dissociating, I'm like losing time while I'm in this game, that might be a sign that they need to drop out of the game and take some time to do self-care and take some mental health time for themselves and maybe seek help. Because I've never been in a game where I haven't been friends with the other players. So I don't know if people are regularly not close enough with other people to inquire after their mental health. But if you're in a party with friends and you notice them having some issues, it would be worth it to sort of acknowledge that and talk to them about it. If it is a mental health issue that's causing them to struggle with the game, then it can be a great help for them to simply have acknowledgement and have somebody reassure them that, you know, you won't blame them for dropping out of the game for their own sake.
Absolutely. There is also one style of person that we haven't really talked of, even on top of people who are going through mental health issues. Sometimes people are there to be around people, and these are people who are wanting to play something more of a support character. So they're not going to be the front and center of everything. That every now and then they get their little quip in. They make sure everyone remembers that they're there, and that's it. They're there kind of to decompress on the day. That, yes, they are there, they are present, but they're not the main driving force behind everything.
Yeah.
That's okay, too. Like, there are, I forget the last total, it's like 8, 9 billion ways of doing things. In the end, talk to your players. If your players are okay and you're just needing a new direction to do it, have a new session zero. That's absolutely permissible to do. If the players are wanting to go off do something else, if they're wanting to take a completely different direction, if you're wanting to check out but someone else wants to take over, as long as everyone's coming to the decision together, that's cool. The worst thing that's ever happened to me is the GM saying, okay, I'm out of ideas for where this campaign's going, we're done. And what David said was right. That felt like a lot of wasted time.
Yeah.
The question of, okay, what do we want to do about this never really came after. Whether it was even just sort of running some sort of fiasco-like thing of, well, this is the end of how I'm seeing my character and getting a tiny bit of closure on that. Like, I know closure sounds a little pretentious when we're talking about RPG characters, but...
No, it's totally a thing. Like, you put the time and effort into this campaign and into these characters, and I finally pulled the plug on my Star Wars game because, like, there wasn't enough continued interest in it, and I could not get back into it to continue writing, and so we basically pulled the plug. But I would not feel good about leaving it as is, so I'm going to be, like, divulging the secrets and giving everybody the proper closure for the time that they put into it. Because it may not be a tangible thing. Like, you're not creating a story that other people can get in on because it is a very personal thing. But you're creating that memory. And you're creating, you know, that experience for yourself and your friends. And it's just as real as anything else.
My horror, the space dragon now has a crayon of all things and is drawing all over my incredibly ancient star map. He's making corrections, but he's radically altering the directions.
Oh, so that's how we're supposed to get to the fabled lost treasure of the third Kuat. It makes sense that it's in a hyperspace bubble off the Biss Run. No one would ever think to look that deep into the core.
I've never even heard of this treasure. I guess that's why we needed the Duinuaguin's help. Well, let's go find the hoard, then. I'll make myself some more waffles on the next Tale from the Hydean Way. You can find show updates on Twitter at The Hydean Way, and I'm at Shadowblinder without an E.
And I'm at Deuterium Ice.
And I'm at AKA Agent Shades, and we are all at TheHydeanWay.com, where you can find previous episodes, links to things we talk about in the show, and our live play podcast, Heroes of the Hydean Way.
Our podcast is on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, where you can find more episodes and help us out by rating and reviewing us. Drop us a holocom at tales@thehydeanway.com.
We're also on Facebook as Tales from the Hydean Way. If you like what we do and want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thehydeanway.